sometime on their own. Beyond my head, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Everyone, I think we are just a few minutes behind, so we're going to get this party started. Welcome everyone to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. We are going to start this meeting with a little joke. Ryan is not here tonight. Kat, come, please save me. No, it's not going to be me. Oh, it's going to be you. Yes, it is. Right now.
Cat alcoholic. Okay. So, Joe, this is Joe. What have you come for, God? God says, well, Joe, I've come with some good news and some bad news. What do you want first? Joe, I like to start the morning with some good news. God, I've come to tell you we have AA meetings in heaven. Joe, all right, that's great. So what's the bad news? You're chairing tonight's meeting.
Thank you, Kat. I liked it, personally. Hi, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Lexi. Thank you all for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. We ask that you turn off all devices that make noise and might disturb others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Everybody ready? All right.
Please, Jesus, I pray to you, don't let me go.
You could all join me in the Foglight Prayer. If you don't know it by heart, it should be on the screen or on a chair in front of you. God. From There Is a Solution, Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Tonight I have asked Miss Marina to come up and read the spiritual experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it's kind of important to know what one is. Marina.
Hi, I'm Marina. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Marina.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God-conscious, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 567, 568.
Thank you, Marina. All right. I just ask that you please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. It's also a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane mode, or you can always just turn them off. Without further ado, it is my pleasure to introduce tonight's speaker. She is a woman that just lights up every room she walks into. We know her. We love her. Miss Marion.
What happened? It was a loud smooch, right? You're going to smooch loud. Hi, everyone. I'm Marian. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I never used to say that till I met Peter M. in the fellowship in South Florida. And it used to scare me a lot to say that. But I know it to be true in my life that I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And I'm, what? How do we get to do that? It's so amazing. And so I'm grateful for that today. And my sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I get to sponsor a lot of women in AA. And it's a life beyond my wildest dreams. I have a sponsor with, or a sponsee with 6 years that just celebrated this week, Heather. And anybody else who's celebrating time out there, you know, congratulations. Whether it's a day, any day above ground, sucking air is a miracle for us alcoholics, right? So I love the freedom that we have here at Alcoholics and God, that we can call it fifth session, fifth step. And I tend to love the fact that it can be the fifth session and really just be able to communicate to you. You know, Bill used to talk about, you know, speak from the heart and you'll touch the heart. And I know that that's been key for me in my recovery. It's the women and the men in my life that have just genuinely shared their brokenness, their victories, their fears. You know, and because this one thing I know about alcoholism, it is the disease of loneliness, and it wants to keep me locked in, wants me to think I'm different, wants me to think that nobody's gonna understand what a wreck I am or whatever, and it always wants to just lock me down and keep me separated, and so I'm grateful for those that went before me and that I have the freedom to share my heart and where I am in my walk with God today, where I am in my recovery today. And it never fails, like, you know, Peter talks, you know, I'll drop his name a lot because that's what I always do. And, you know, and people I know, like, where I was last week and where I am this week, it's like, you know, the things that God's done in my life, the things that God's put on my heart to share tonight. You know, I know that when we're an open vessel and we seek communication with God, God will feed us for whatever we need. And it's always just about, excuse me, becoming unclogged and cleaning the pipes and, okay, God, where's the block? You know, where's the stuff? What's blocking me from you? What's blocking me? First of all, what's blocking me from my other alcoholics and what's blocking me from you, God? And really to just really seek that that power and whatever it is that I need at any given time. And so I just stand before you as a woman that's a, you know, I'm a work in progress from now what, you know, till the day I get to go to the big meeting in the sky. And I hope I'm not chairing one tonight, you know, because I'm going to go get me some noodles and panini now. just tease it. And so this is where it's been for me this week. This is where it's been for me this week. It's been about this word that we don't talk a lot about in Alcoholics Anonymous, but God just will not let me get away from this. And so I'm going to share my experience with the word fear tonight. And what it looks like in the fourth step, and what it looks like in our inventory, and what it looks like walking this out, and how it's just so sneaky. You know, the old timers used to say, you know, fear is just F everything and run. And, you know, and then we'd hear that it's, you know, false evidence appearing real, and face everything and recover. And, you know, all these little acronyms for the word fear. And you know, as I broke down some inventory stuff last week, and I talked a lot about resentment and my personal resentments that I'd had and some of the things that I wrote on paper, and and a new revelation in my last walk through the steps with harms, with the harms of that I had caused in my life that weren't related to a resentment or weren't related to a fear, but the harms that I'd caused in my sobriety and in my life, and being able to look at those and go, wow, it just like unlocked this thing for me that was really freeing. And today I stand before, you. It sounds so, you know, whatever. And I want to talk about that word because the last thing, it's like the last thing I feel like our disease wants us to do is admit when we're afraid. And it's so sneaky. And it's so powerful, and it manifests itself in so many different ways. Where was I going here? Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, and the employer and his wife. So on page 65 before this, it breaks down our columns of our inventory, and it breaks down about our sex relations, our self-esteem, bracketed alongside of it, like it's telling us, fear, bracketed alongside of security, fear, personal relationships, fear, self-esteem, fear. And our book goes on to describe this so beautifully. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil, yikes, and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set into motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. I'm telling you, when I'm driven by fear, when you hit a place in myself, you're hurting my pride, you're hurting my self-esteem, you're hurting my security, you're hurting my pocketbook and all these things, man, I'm going to react from a place. I'm going to react from a place that I'm not going to tell you I'm afraid. You know, somehow in all of us, like, you know, some of the things that Peter and I discuss, you know, I have this thing, I'm an insecure woman, and my fiance travels, and I'm insecure, and we've learned to be able to go to a place where we can just flat out say that I can say that word to him. It's not like I'm jealous, I'm envious, I'm this, I'm that. I'm afraid. You know, I'm afraid. Or if I, you know, situations at work or situations with women I work with, you know, like I want to just blunder them with the big book and push it down their throat and do it my way and all this, you know, I want to keep, you know, two of the basic things are, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose something that I have, or I'm afraid that I'm going to not get what I want. And what it boils down to is this thing called self-centered fear. What I want, what I get, when I get it. Can anybody relate to this, or am I the only one up here? Thank God. Okay, you know, because God said it and I'm doing it. Okay, so this is some of the stuff that happens, but did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? We think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. And, you know, I can say time after time I've gone through the work and the big book, you know, last time, oh, I'm afraid of jumping out of an airplane. I'm afraid to scuba dive. I'm afraid of elevators, or I'm afraid of these things. But you know what? I'm afraid of losing something I got. I'm afraid if you find me out when I get behind this podium that I'm really full of crap and you're going to think I suck. You know, I'm afraid of what you think of me at any given moment. I'm afraid that I'm going to lose you as a friend. I'm afraid when a sponsee doesn't show up at a meeting, ultimately that they're going to die, you know? I'm afraid you're gonna, you know, I'm afraid, you know, and I go through my life and I'm gonna act out in different ways to protect that, to with my pride, with my ego, to say, I'm not gonna show you that. Because after all, I'm married and I'm 29 years sober and I love God, and holy God, what if you think that I'm afraid one time? What if you think that, what if I expose that to you? What a trap. You know, there's plenty of old timers in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that sit in back rows with their 40 years or their 30 years or their 20 years or whatever it is. And they can sit in a meeting and I'm such and such person. And if I let you know how I feel, if I let you know I'm afraid, if I get vulnerable to you, and if I show you who I really am, then it's like this thing, you know. Oh my gosh, how could the great so-and-so feel like that? How could the great, you know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, we can put people in that position. We can put people that, you know, if it's the great Mike Chase, you know, comes in the room and God forbid he's like fearful one night and we go to him and he says, well, how you doing, Mike? Well, I'm afraid today or whatever. That we can put people in that position, that they rise above the human condition, that they rise above their alcoholism, and that these things don't hurt sometimes, that life doesn't hurt sometimes, that I won't get noticed, that something's going to happen to you, and all this stuff. And, you know, by God's grace, we've all made it into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've all been given a chance. We all have this ability to, you know, and so it's our pride, it's our fear, it's our self-centered fear, like, oh my God, if somebody sees me exactly the way I am, they're not going to approve. You know, I went over some inventory with a sponsee over the phone earlier today about some of her fears and part of, you know, and it was just really eye-opening to me to just see how I can view the world still through my eyes. I can view it that way rather than this trust and reliance upon God. And this is one thing. I hope you can understand this. Maybe you can't, but whatever. Let's give it a shot. But, you know, the longer we're sober and the more we seek God and we have this trust and reliance on God, sometimes I can still use, I hope this makes sense, I can use my relationship with God, my conscious contact with God, my inspiration with God, and sometimes it can get locked in with self-reliance. Does that make sense? Like, oh yeah, 29 years sober, Marian, prayed all morning, and I'm going to go put myself, you know, it's not about getting enough spiritual muscles to go be self-reliant. It's about getting spiritual muscles to become God-reliant. See, I'm never going to rise above my alcoholism. I'm never going to rise above the fact that every beat of my heart and absolutely everything I do, I want to be in God's will. But when I put my trust and reliance on my own strength and that I can keep a sponsee sober, or I've got to get in the way of this because I'm afraid that, you know, of anything, that I can get in the way of God's work still. Okay? So it's just a whole different way of what God was speaking to me today or throughout the week or whatever it was. So self-reliant fear, self-centered fear. We ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance had failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. Self-confidence. What comes with self-confidence sometimes when we get a little off? Self-confidence. Well, now I've got it. I'm behind a podium now. I must be hot poop, you know, or whatever. Self-reliance, and then I get up here and I freeze, and it's like, oh God, if you don't show up, you know, whatever. But it's just being, turning in and watching and being aware of that stuff, you know? So I had great, we had self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other when it made us cocky. Yikes, it was worse. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we're now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite self. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him. Does he enable? Oh my God, this line is so freaking beautiful. And humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? Holy cow. You know, I mean, life comes, things hit, storms hit, and somewhere in the middle of that calamity that we can have a peace that passes all understanding inside of us in the middle of that. At the same time, I listened to my friend Holly speak this week, and, you know, this is a woman, her daughter had died of an overdose, and she sat in the car and she had her picture and she held it to her chest, but she was so absolutely surrounded. Her daughter, I mean, it was horrible situation. And in this time, I mean, calamity with serenity. She had sponsees around her. She had family around her. She had AA around her, and people surrounded her. And she said at the same time that she felt all this calamity, she could feel God and she could feel serenity at the exact same time. And I've been able to experience that in my life, that I know that in the middle of whatever is going on, no matter how hard it is, that I know that God's got me. You know, knowing that God's got you, matching. Calamity is a big fat word, guys. Calamity's yikes, you know. But matching that calamity with the same level of serenity. When we never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator, we can laugh who thinks the spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They never apologize for him. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. This is so our fear prayer. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us to be, to just be. At once, I love this, at once we begin to outgrow fear. I guess part of me today wanted to just say, you know, like, I'd like a teacher today or whatever. I want to be able to say when I'm afraid more. I want to be, you know, transparent about those things. Because when, the deal is with this self-centered fear, I know that in places where I can get that, where I can be in self-centered fear and I become aware that that's where I am, that's half the battle right there, man. I can start outgrowing it. And yeah, we can write it in an inventory and we can put our fears behind us, kind of. But maybe just a thing to walk out. I know that that's something that God's doing in my life. So I'm going to take a drink of water. Trust. So I was looking at this too, you know, it's like, it's, you know, we're putting our trust in God and we're putting our so when we have a relationship with someone, it's a firm belief in the reliability, the truth, and the ability or the strength of someone or something. The word faith isn't relational, but the word trust is about relationship. So how do I learn to trust God in that stuff? How do I learn to trust God in my fears? Well, that means I better have a relationship with him, right? Knows who I am. I'm afraid, God. Hi, help me, you know? So that's current stuff. in 1990, my first time through the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've told you guys that I went through the first three steps in a treatment center, and I was writing a fourth step, and I had a sponsor who had cancer, and she had passed away. And I was sitting on this fourth step, and this friend at work was getting married, and I was a bridesmaid in this wedding, and, you know, I'm sitting on a year sober, and see, back then it was a year into writing your fourth step. It's not like South Florida where you're, you know, sponsoring people at 90 days, which is awesome. It's beautiful, but I wasn't there. That's where I was. And I had worked the first three steps in Alcoholics, and it was kind of Alcoholics. I was treatment center 1, 2, 3. And so I'm sitting on this fourth step. My sponsor dies. You know, there was calamity, man. The first woman I trusted, the first woman I'd really just, and I think that that's so important in our relationship with our sponsor. The first woman that's going to hear our guts, that we're going to be able to just say, I'm a wreck today. This is the way it is. Or the first man that we really learn to trust, and we really learn to build relationship with, and we really learn to be accepted exactly where we are. Because I think that that's what we all need, right? Is just to be accepted right where we are. Messy, beautiful, great, happy, joy, fear, whatever. And so my sponsor passes away. And man, you know, I'm experiencing the death of someone for the first time in sobriety. And somebody that was one of the first women I ever trusted in my entire life. And I'm sitting on this fourth step, and this friend was getting married. I go to this wedding. I'm a bridesmaid. Hadn't been sitting on the fourth step. And it talks about that in our book, right? Is I'm going to botch how it says it. How does it say it about step four? That if we avoid this step, that we might drink. That's the Marian version. That's all I can come up with right now. Just take it or leave it. And so I go to this wedding, and I'm sitting at a table. The wedding's over. I'm sitting at a reception, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, it was like being in this, my own shadow. The strange mental blank spot happened. Sorry, there was a butterfly. No. The strange mental blank spot happened, guys. I was sitting there, and apparently they were pouring champagne. And apparently I had a glass, and apparently they filled it up. And I remember sitting at this table, and I remember it to this day, that this drink was in my hand and it was right in front of me. In my hand. It was from here to here. And something came between that. That power, which is God. Because in our books that it talks about, we recoil from it like a hot flame. All of a sudden, the strange mental blank spot, that drink is in my hand, and it is on its way to my mouth, and I had no idea how it got there. And there may be some drunks, and there may be some people in this room that can relate to that same situation, but it was there, and it happened. And I put that down, and I ran out of that place so quick. All I knew to do that day was go down to dry dock, and I ran down to dry dock, and I sat with drunks. And we talked and we talked, and I wrote and I wrote, and we talked and we talked, and I wrote and I wrote. And I'm telling you, God, it's like, and I will never forget the miracle of what that feels like to actually have God just like come right in that place. So, wow, I'm thirsty. For water. So I don't have a sponsor. I'm sitting on a fourth step, and I need to get it off of me. You know, I need to do the rest of this work. And there was many suggestions for many people. And our book talks about finding the right person. And I'm going to go there a minute. You know, someone that we can trust. Whether, you know, when it was first written in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there wasn't go to your sponsor. Because there wasn't no such thing as the word sponsor back then. To go to a closed mouth friend, to go to a minister, to go to a family member, which God forbid I'd ever do that, you know, or any of us, right? And so, I told you about my little brother that lived under the bridge, my little brother says to me, so there was this man, and his name was Reverend Ron, and I'm not even going to put his last name in it today, Mike, so you don't have to edit. So there was this man named Reverend Ron, and he was the closest thing I knew to God with skin on. And this man was a great, great, great friend of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was a mighty man of God. And he was a man that loved people exactly where they were. He showed the love of God like no person I'd ever known. He had, my husband and I got married. He was there. When my son died, I walked around the corner at the hospital and he was standing there. He was like 6'6" and he had an afro and, you know, he wore those old leisure suits and just a mighty, my kids loved him, man. He always had a pocket full of candy, and he was never like, get Jesus or you'll be damned, you know? I mean, he was never that kind of guy. He was just a guy who showed God's love. And to this day, he is one of them. Next to my father, Ron's my hero. My hero. And he walked me through the darkest time of my life. He walked me through when my son passed. He was at the cemetery, and he was at making the funeral arrangements, and he was at my home with my three children, and literally, I look at that, and I know that. I mean, I was in a blackout. You know, I don't even know how I got through that. I do know how I got through that with God, and when my mom passed on, he was by her side and walked me through that, and. You know, it was never, ever, ever shoving God down my throat. He was just a trusted God with skin on in my life. And so that little brother that lived under the bridge, I'm contemplating who I'm going to share this step with. And he goes, well, you should share it with Reverend Ron. And I'm like, great idea. You know, that's a great idea. And so I call him. I make an appointment. He says, that'd be great. And it wasn't just like Reverend Ron coming to listen to Marianne's fifth step. This was Reverend Ron who went to treatment centers and he listened to fifth steps. There was this house out in Linden, Washington. They used to have a treatment center and it was owned by Randy Bachman and they changed it to a treatment center. And he just like was in there and he was always with the drunks and he was always helping the people. And so I make this appointment with him. He's going to show up at my house at 9 o'clock on a whatever morning. I just remember it was a 9 o'clock thing. And back in the day, we used to get, you know, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have little business cards with our phone number on them. Back then, we used to like write phone numbers on coasters and napkins. And the morning when that was going to happen, like this is my, one of my, an idol, a man of God. And the morning he was supposed to come over, I got up in the morning and I completely and totally freaked out. Completely freaked out. I'm like, there is no way I can tell this man this stuff about myself. Why? Because I was afraid. And why was I afraid? Because if he really knew me. If he really knew me. And so I started taking, I had all these pieces of paper with all these phone numbers of all these women in AA and sitting on my dresser. And I started calling numbers, you know. I just started calling numbers. Like, I got to tell this stuff to somebody else. And like a lot of good AAs, nobody answered the phone, you know, of course. Nobody answered the phone. And there comes a knock on the door. And I talk about this, guys. And we can, you know, many times through the work, not as many as some people, but as many as I've been through it, something huge and significant happened for me in my life. My first time through this work. My first time through, my first fifth step changed my life. My first 5, 6, and 7 changed my life. And this man sat in my living room, and I sat on a couch, and there was a table in between us, and he sat in a chair right on the other side of that table. And I began just telling him, reading that inventory to him, and sobbing. And it was like the most crushing, humiliating, excruciatingly painful situation. Because I'm bearing my soul, and I'm saying my deepest, darkest secrets, and I'm saying all those things from my past, all those things that God was giving me to set me free. And I'm telling this man, and I'm taking a risk, and I'm not giving myself any credit for that. I'm not saying that, but God had me do it. And I poured through those pages, and I shared that stuff with him. And when I was done and I looked up from the pages, the very first thing that came out of his mouth to me, and I'll never forget it as long as I live, he said, "Marian, are you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore?" And I was like, "Yeah. Yeah." And he wrote a list. He gave me character defects. He gave me some things to pray on. He gave me my hour of quiet time and all that stuff that goes along with it. But the thing that happened for me in that was such a huge spiritual understanding for me, was I had a friend, Karen, and Karen was going to meet me for lunch afterwards. And after we were all done, sorry, I'm going to cough. And we go to this restaurant. I'm in downtown Bellingham, and we go to this restaurant, and I'm standing there. And it was as if, like, I know for myself the separation that happened, that the woman that I was all those days up to 30 years old, on whatever day of the week or the month that was not the woman I was at lunch. See, I'm not all those things that were written on those papers. That's who I was in my disease. Those are the things that drove me. Those are the things of my past. Those are the secrets of my past. And I'm telling you, you get to that point and you're new and you're here and you can look at that with fear. You know, I don't know how many of you are like me where you can look back on your life, and I can look back on those things, the things that drove me, and I don't even know who that woman is today. And what would I say to her? You know, I was reading this thing in the about the Oxford group. And, you know, it's a little different of what we do in AA to be doing with a man of the cloth. So, like, obviously, he can't share. Well, yeah, if he would have been a drunk, he probably would have been sharing it. But, you know, the importance, it says the importance of sharing it, we better to go to God alone than not go at all or whatever. But also the freedom that I get to do when I'm sitting with one of my girls, and, well, they're not my girls, they're God's girls. You know, that as they're going through that work and as they're sharing that stuff, the importance of being able to share part of my story with her. You know, part of my story, part of my stuff with me. When they can tell me the deepest, darkest secret of this ugly thing. Usually I start an inventory like this. Usually it starts like this. Tell me the worst thing that you didn't write on the paper, that you weren't going to tell anybody. Let's just start right there. And sometimes it's something they did write. But I'm telling you, you want to do, I mean, that's a really cool way to do it. And I borrowed it or stole it from somebody. I can't remember who, but I'd give the credit if I could think of the name. You know, just being able to just get that stuff off of us, right? And so, where was I going with that? I want to go there's a solution. So that's what the four absolutes was talking about. The four absolutes and not the four absolutes. The Oxford group, what was talking about is in that confession of sins. In that, because that's really what it is. We have a sinful nature, and these are the sins of our past, and we need to be free from them. But how freeing for us, people that are full of pride and full of ego and full of not going to tell you who I really am, that I can sit across the table from somebody that goes, oh, yeah, I did that and worse. It's like, whoa. That's the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, right? When we sit down with that person and they have the same shortcomings, they have the same stories, and maybe even worse. Okay, where did I say I was just going to go? Oh, I know where it is. So we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And this is going to talk about our fifth step promises. And this is what I felt. Like, I can look at this part of this paragraph, and I 100% know this is exactly how I felt in the restaurant that day with my friend. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. Fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, and we feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. That's some pretty beautiful promises. And we're only at five. And we're only at five. Finding out who we really are, fundamentally in step two, where it says deep down inside every man, woman, and child, is the fundamental idea of God. It's there. But what I need to do is I need to uncover, and I need to discover, and I need to discard those things that were myself, that were a part of who I am, but aren't the part of who Marion is today. And sometimes inventory doesn't cover that. And when I'm doing nightly reviews and things like that, and I slack on that stuff, and I got to go back through the work, and I've got to look at this stuff all over again. But each and absolutely every time, and I'm going to tell you, each and absolutely every time I do it, that same feeling comes over me when I'm going to sit down with the four step with somebody. Oh my God, what if they really know me? What if they really hear this? I'm afraid absolutely every time. So I think I'm done. Love you guys. Thanks so much for listening.
I want that one.
These are shorter steps.
All right, everyone. Can we thank Marion one more time? You're great. And now we're going to bring up Mark for the secretary's report.
My name is Mark. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. Keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going to go around. While we're doing that, I've asked Joe to come up here and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and exactly what it means to be a recovered alcoholic. So here's Joe.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Joe. Recovered. We're not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you, Jeff. So, 1940s big book style sponsorship, from the foreword to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% of them got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room tonight? That's quite a bit. Anyone need a sponsor tonight in the room? Come on, no one? We got one? So this young lady up front, all you recovered alcoholics with your hands raised, women, bombard her after the meeting. And let's get her back to God. So it's the last meeting of the month of January. So what we do the last meeting of the month, we recognize people that are celebrating anniversaries in the month of January. So what we're going to do is anyone who's celebrated this past month, just please stand up. And we're going to wait till the end for applause, but if you could just stand up and we're going to recognize you. Month of January celebrants. Go ahead. We got Jake with 1 year. Fred? We got Fred with 4 years. Go ahead. You, yep. We got Heather with 3 years. 6 years. We got Danny with 6 years. Kelly with 2 years. We have Shannon with 4 years. Congratulations, folks. We have some quick announcements real quick. Broward County Intergroup, all your AA supplies, medallions, big books, as Bill sees it. That's your spot to get the AA supplies. Anyone's itching to get out of self, there's plenty of volunteer opportunities. Go back a second. I think, is AA Got Talent, is that just mixed in there now? That's okay, so AA's Got Talent, that is this Saturday, so if there's any opera singers or acrobats just happen to be strolling through Coral Springs, Florida, that's your place to shine. So you got 4 days to prepare, so we'll see you there. Broward County Institutions Committee, we missed the first meeting, January 12th. Next meeting will be February 9th. So if anyone's interested in giving back to jails, institutions, hospitals, bringing meetings into there, it really is a great way to give back service. There we go. I already announced that, but just a second friendly reminder. AA's Got Talent, Saturday night, Coral Springs, Florida. Spring Fling, if anyone has a crock pot that they're just willing to give a shot, I mean, want to make some chili, Cincinnati chili, whatever. Spring Fling, March 2nd. See you there. And then this is a few months down the road, but right here in this very building, we're going to have Fellowship of the Spirit, South Florida 2019. We have Mickey and Marie flying in from Colorado. Mickey's the AA speaker. Marie is the Al-Anon speaker. They do like a dual session here all weekend, and it's a great experience. So we hope everyone's going to come out to that. I'm excited. And then Monday night on the third floor of this very building, we have the big books. Well, Thursday night, we have this group here. It starts at 7:15. Monday night, we have on the third floor the big book study. You know, we break down the mechanics of the book. So please join us for that. Starts at 7:15. Fellowship starts at 6:30. Also, we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on that back table by the gentleman with the blue sweatshirt. And again, we meet here every Thursday, 7:15. See you all next week. Oh, one last thing. We have a 75-foot no smoking, no vaping rule here at the church. There's other stuff that goes on at this church, so if you will, there's plenty of smoke buckets out there. Please utilize them and just kind of scatter off to the corner, if you will, after the meeting to smoke. Thank you.
Better let them know. Thanks, Mark. All right, just so everyone knows, we have tonight's session and all of the past speakers' podcast online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to again invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, 7:15, third floor. And to those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, just form a nice little line down the center row to thank Marion. And then we're going to close this up with the Lord's Prayer seated. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power,
doodles and zans and oh, when you're smiling. When you're smiling. Smiles with you, baby. Yes, when you laughing, I love a photo when you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. Crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on. And I hope the world smiles.
shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
All right, Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Lifted, I see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now, Fear has left me and I'm standing tall, a pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind, for all this time. Sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time right outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to start. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could compare. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.